Welcome in to another edition of the Roost Podcast. This is Matthew flying solo this week. It's been a busy couple weeks. Carter would love to join us, but we're trying to piece things together. Had a lot of good content that we wanted to get out to you guys and make sure you had a chance to listen to, and wanted to do that as quick as possible. So we got two things coming up for you today. We have two interviews that we think y'all are going to enjoy. The first one is with former Rice baseball starting pitcher Evan Kravitz. He's in the Cincinnati Reds organization right now, and it's been a minute since we've chatted with him down at Reckling Park. So we caught up with him and talked Rice baseball this season, what the minor leagues are like, and that entire experience. So that was fun getting to catch up with him and talk some baseball. And then after that, it's a busy time. It's rolling around to March now. So we also have, of course, basketball on the brain as well as baseball. So we had Clifton Douglas join us with the Conference USA office to kind of talk some big picture things about where basketball is for this conference, you know, pod play and the Rice women's team 30-game winning streak, which I feel regrettable. I think the last time that we put out the podcast after National Signing Day, we alluded to the streak of reaching 30 games, and then they lost that night, I think, that we put it out to Old Dominion. But, you know, if that's the case, and the words we do say here on the podcast do have ultimate meaning, then I speak into existence a 12-0 Rice football season and a conference tournament championship for the baseball game. Wait, it has to work both ways, right? Maybe, maybe not. But either way, it's still a pretty impressive accomplishment for the Rice women. It was good to talk to Clifton about that, and then just Frisco and that partnership and a lot of things going on. So we will let y'all take a look at, or listen, I guess, to both of those interviews. And then as well, we've got spring football happening right now. A couple quick updates up on the site for that we kind of put a quick look at the depth chart going into spring and some couple of observations from the first day of practice. So we are not going to spend an hour recapping what the depth chart looks like entering practice and overreact. We will kind of draw some points out, so you can go ahead and read those up on the site, and there will be more coming with that as well, both on the podcast in the next couple of weeks as well as on the site. So make sure that you are following us on social media at The Roost. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And then, of course, you are listening to this, but if you haven't checked out The Roost Pod, at The Roost Pod on Twitter, to make sure that you are aware whenever these podcasts are dropping. And if you are on Twitter, easiest thing to do is just go and hit subscribe to the bell on The Roost Pod Twitter account. While we are going to be tweeting game stuff and covering things on the main podcast, that you might not want a phone notification every time we tweet something, or you might, but for the podcast, we promise not to spam you and use that. That's just going to be for dropping podcasts and updating you on what's going on there. So if you do set up notifications there, you will get a sneak peek on, we'll let you know when we're recording and when things are coming out. So you won't want to miss that. So we have those two, and I think that's it. So we won't mess around with anything else. We'll get right to those interviews. And again, thank you to Evan and Clifton for coming on and joining us. And I hope y'all enjoy the show. Welcome into the latest edition of the Roost Podcast. I am joined here with former Rice Owl pitcher Evan Kravitz. He's now with the Cincinnati Reds, and he's been so gracious enough to share some time with us. And as we were chatting offline, I don't think I've talked to you, Evan, in about a year or so. So we have a lot to cover. How have things been?
Right, absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Matt. Things are going really well. I'm out here in Goodyear, Arizona, getting ready for my first spring training. So, you know, really looking forward to it and enjoying meeting a bunch of these guys that are kind of filtering in and out of the clubhouse, and really looking forward to my first full year.
Is that entire experience kind of settled in that you're saying it now, that you're in spring training playing professional baseball?
You know, it's a little weird. It's certainly new, but I'm definitely getting used to it. I mean, the cool thing is that a lot of the guys I'm with are guys that I've either played against or, you know, guys that I played with growing up. It's kind of how the baseball community works is, you know, everybody knows someone these days. So I know a bunch of the guys in the locker room, which has made it, you know, a pretty cool thing just to kind of catch up with guys I haven't seen in a while and stuff like that. So it doesn't seem like that new of a, you know, function when you kind of have some familiar faces going in there.
So just kind of nomadic life, but together.
Right.
Is that what makes any sense?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think that's the way to look at it. I mean, the way I think of it is kind of regardless of what level you're playing at, you're likely to be playing with a bunch of guys that you've met in your draft class. And I already made some really good friends here. So I'm really looking forward to kind of experiencing this journey with a bunch of guys that I've grown close to over the past year.
And so I guess over the past year, correct me if I'm wrong, but you've only pitched in one professional game, but you do have a perfect ERA. That I'm lucky. So you're going to keep that, I assume. And then I guess start at the beginning of that draft experience and what your kind of expectations were coming into your senior season of at Rice. And then lo and behold, you leave a top 5 round draft pick. And it seems like a wild ride from this side.
I mean, believe me, on the other side, it was just as wild. I mean, I was kind of doing some background work to start applying for jobs over the fall of my senior year. And, things kind of took off pretty fast. And once the season, you know, got going and I started pitching a little better and kind of learning how to start and kind of how to work my way through lineups and, you know, the stuff got a little better here and there. It started to become more of a reality that this might happen, but it's still, you know, it still all happened so fast. I mean, it's still crazy to me that the season already started for 2020, and I feel like I was just in that uniform.
Can you boil it down to like a really great start or a couple starts where the switch flipped in your mind, like I might actually be able to do this?
I feel like I just started hearing from some more teams here and there. So I remember after the first start of the season, I spoke to my advisor after the game and, you know, he said, you know, a lot of teams are kind of, you know, interested. You piqued their interest, you know, let's keep it going. And then as the season went on and more teams kind of reached out, it kind of set in that, you know, I might have an opportunity to do this. This could be a fun thing and kept going and going. And then eventually, you know, it turned into a maybe from a maybe into a definitely. And then at that point, it just turned into, you know, hopefully we get a really good fit. But I feel like gradually as the season progressed, the idea set in, you know, more and more that I was going to end up being able to play baseball, you know, in the future, which was obviously my goal from day one heading into Rice. So I was really excited about that.
And I know we talked about at the time the first Saturday start that you made was actually in relief of Addison Moss, who got scratched with an injury. And you came in and you filled one Saturday and you weren't sure if you were getting one Saturday or two or three, or what do you end up throwing, like 20?
I don't remember the exact number. I think in college you get maybe 14, 15 starts. That can be completely wrong. I mean, don't quote me on that. But yeah, I mean, I really wasn't, I really didn't know going into the season what my role was going to be. I was competing with my roommate, my best friend, Jackson Parthasarthy, for one of the roles. I knew that. And before the season started, unfortunately, Addison kind of went down for a little bit. And, you know, my goal was just to kind of take that opportunity and run with it and just, you know, do everything I can to put the team and myself in a good situation.
And then that kind of all progresses. And then you get to draft night. Is it the same kind of surreal scene where you get the phone call and everybody's in the room? And it kind of paint that picture for me.
Right. Well, you know, I had some advice before the draft. I mean, some guys were just telling me to not even worry about it. You know, take your mind off of it, go work out in the morning. You know, others told me to just make sure you're with your family, let them all be involved. So I woke up in the morning. I think this was the second day of the draft. And I tried to work out in the morning, go for a swim. I think I went for a swim, just try and, you know, act like it was a normal day. And I think I had just gotten in from the pool. And the funny part was my dad was home. Actually, both my parents were home. My mom was working from home that day because she wanted to be there when it happened. But she had a conference call for work. that was pretty important. So, you know, I'm with my dad. We're kind of just hanging out. Meanwhile, my mom's in another room on the phone. So then I got the phone call, and I don't think my dad was in my room at that point, but I went out, kind of gave him a little smile, and, you know, he freaked out, of course, and then brought out my computer. I don't think I even had the stream pulled it up, and then heard the announcement. Obviously, you know, I was pretty excited, and then kind of tiptoed over to my mom's office because I didn't want to interrupt her from her work call, knocked on the door, gave her two thumbs up. And then walked away. And then, like, you know, 15 minutes later, when she, you know, finished, we were able to kind of celebrate it as a family. So it was a pretty surreal and funny experience.
No big deal, Mom, but kind of a big deal.
Right. I remember I was standing right outside the door, and she started freaking out a little. And then she was on the phone with, you know, I don't know how many people for this conference call. And she said, "Excuse me, guys, my son was just drafted." And I think they let out like a little collective applause, which is pretty funny. But I certainly didn't want to kind of interrupt her in you know, what she was doing that day.
I mean, draft stories are so fun because it's one of those things that we were talking with Calvin Anderson, former Rice lineman that's now with the Denver Broncos, about that entire rundown. He said nobody ever really writes a book and tells you this is how you become and how you be a professional athlete. It's just kind of like you're caught up in the moment. You're like, oh, so I guess this is how it starts.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it, you know, there's no, there's certainly a buildup to it, but then, you know, it just happens. And then you get your phone call. And after you get that phone call, you're just kind of sitting there and you're really excited. And, you know, you're getting all these texts and your phone's blowing up. And kind of after that euphoria hits, you know, you're just kind of sitting there on the couch thinking, okay, so what do I do now? You know? And a couple hours later, I got a phone call from one of the Reds guys kind of telling me what the process was. But in the meantime, you're kind of just sitting there trying to figure out what this means. You know, do I go to Cincinnati now? Do I go to their spring training facility? Do I need to start packing? You know, how much time do I have for these things? It was kind of sitting there.
Where is their spring training facility?
We're in West Phoenix. The town is named Goodyear. So it's West Phoenix, about 25 miles west of Scottsdale and kind of the downtown area.
Something you're familiar with now, but maybe you're a diehard aficionado of where everyone's spring training locations is. But I think that I would figure that would be one thing that you might not have done all of your homework on the Reds necessarily before you got that phone call. Or maybe you did have an idea of kind of who was after you at the beginning.
I mean, the geography of it, I don't think I knew that well. I knew they were in Arizona, but I wasn't, you know, I felt like I was in a situation where, you know, whatever team drafted me, you know, I was going to be ecstatic about it. I, you know, in these kind of scenarios, it's not like you really have much of a choice. So I was kind of just waiting to see what happened, and then I'd kind of do my research from there. And then once it happened, you know, I kind of looked up where we're going, what's it like out there. And I've heard only good things about spring training in Arizona. And ever since I've been out here, I mean, those have been confirmed. It's really nice out here. I mean, the weather can be better, and it's a pretty cool experience out here.
And so you're just at the onset of beginning this year. You did get into one game last year. What was that like? Your nerves, any heightened compared to where they'd been at Rice? And then unfortunately you didn't get any more action. That was kind of one and done.
Right. Yeah. You know, I think I was probably more nervous for my first start at Rice of my senior year than I was for this experience. Kind of the way the rookie ball and short season, you know, fields and leagues are set up is it's a really cool kind of intimate experience, but I probably had more spectators at my Rice starts than I did at this outing. But it was exciting. I knew going in that I wasn't going to be pitching that much. We kind of had a candid discussion with the Reds front office personnel and their trainers. And we talked about how, you know, coming off a long season from Rice, they would want to place some kind of restrictive measures on my pitching, especially knowing that this was my first year as a starter. So I went from 30 innings to 80. And, you know, knowing that, they kind of wanted to restrict it a little bit. So it was more of a let's go out there and see how you feel kind of deal. I think the original plan was to pitch maybe 15 innings, if that total, just kind of get my feet wet. And then, I threw once. And then after that outing, we kind of had another meeting and we just sat down and, you know, they knew my arm was a little beat up after a long season and they decided it would be better to kind of rest me from there on out, kind of get some things cleaned out, cleaned up, and be ready for a full season this year.
And now you're there and the same kind of, I guess, game plan going into your first spring, get on, throw a couple innings here and there and kind of just get used to a new normal.
Right. Right. Exactly. I'm on a kind of, I'm progressing little by little throughout the spring. So I think the plan is to actually hold me back a little bit, keep me on like a slow progression, build up little by little. And then once I get out to, you know, whatever the pitch count they want to see me at is, they'll let me go and, you know, hopefully have a good productive season from there.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll be rooting for you. And I'm sure, I know folks are split between Arizona and Florida, but I know you had Matt Canarino go with you and a couple other guys that got drafted this past year and then are already playing in the minors, maybe a level two up above you or in that area. Are any former Owls or folks that you have played with instead of maybe played against around you? You might be playing some games against them this spring.
I hope so. I really hope so. I know Ford Proctor was in the low A league that the Reds were in last year. He was drafted a year before me. So I'm assuming he'll be, you know, a little higher than I am to start the year. But I'm not sure who exactly is going to be in my league. They don't really tell you where you're going until the end of spring training anyway. So, you know, once we find that out, I'm sure it'd be great to pitch against some of those guys and see some of those guys in a different uniform. I think it'd be a pretty weird experience, but I think it'll be great to see those guys.
Just kind of show up and pitch.
Right. Right. Exactly. I mean, the school part of it's kind of out of the equation now. Now it's, you know, just go out there and pitch.
Must be nice. I know we got a couple Owls that will be making that that draft jump like you did last year. Of course, Trey Cruz is the one that's kind of drawing all the headlines now. You got drafted last year, and I guess Conference USA Player of the Year by just about every publication. Have you had any conversations with folks that are still there on the, hey, so this is what it was like for me, or is this still the so new part for you that you haven't even crossed that bridge yet?
Right, right. I think it's still kind of in that new category. You know, a lot of people have asked me since it happened, kind of what's minor league life like and what are the differences? And I tell them, you know, given that I only really threw once, I feel like I don't even have that full picture of what life is going to be like. I was out in Greenville, Tennessee, which is where our short season affiliate is, for about 3 weeks, basically, until I went back to Arizona, got shut down, and just kind of stayed at the facility. But I definitely still talk to a bunch of the guys back at school. You know, some of my best friends are still there. So it's great to talk to those guys. But I mean, this experience is still going to be really new for me. So I'm looking forward to kind of, you know, venturing my way through it. And then later in the season, you know, when I have my bearings and kind of when I've done the whole ordeal, hopefully I can, you know, get in touch with some of those guys that are still there, like Trey or, you know, like a Roel Garcia and some of those guys that are Justin Collins that are, you know, definitely going to get a call. You know, I know I'm missing a few. I know that, you know, Braden Como is definitely going to play and guys like that and Cade Edwards. But, you know, I'm looking forward to following those guys throughout the year.
You're naming a long list. That's encouraging for the 2020 season, I'd say.
I mean, Rice is always going to have a lot of talented guys. I mean, you know, I think some of these guys are unbelievably talented. So I'm hopefully get a chance to, you know, root for them at the next level as well. But in the meantime, I know I'll be following the team pretty closely this year.
Yeah, and there was a couple guys that I figured you might actually have a better insight than anybody else, is someone who's, you know, been with and pitched with these guys. You mentioned Roel Garcia, and then Blake Brogdon was a guy who got a start on opening weekend, kind of similar situation to you of Roel not being healthy and someone got bumped up and he had a pretty good outing. So those two guys in particular, what have you gotten to know about them and how they compete and what they look like on the mound?
Right. Well, Roel is, I mean, you could ask anyone. He has some of the best stuff probably in college baseball when he's healthy. I think it was 2 years ago I watched him throw a six-inning no-hitter against TCU in a midweek start, or seven innings or something like that. And I mean, there's no doubt that he'll get a really good opportunity to play. I'm really looking forward to him being healthy this year and kind of throwing without any limits. That'll be great to see. And then Blake is another guy who, you know, he's young. He's just a sophomore, but I love Blake. I got along with him really well last year when he was a freshman, and it's really cool to see him kind of put it together. I know we worked really hard. We've kept in touch a little bit, and that's a really cool thing to see him, you know, put it together and, you know, get ready to start doing some great things. I mean, he's really young, so hopefully he can kind of, you know, work his way into having a really good year and kind of be a really good returning arm for the team next season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like there's a lot, because along with you, you had guys like Garrett Gale and Kendall Jeffries and, of course, Matt Canarino. I feel like a lot of the pitching staff has turned over. Is there another guy who's still here that, because of the depth last year, maybe not thrown much, but Rice fans might not know, but a name or two on the either in the bullpen or could be a starting rotation who you think could have a pretty good year and a pretty good career at Rice?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Like I said, I mean, Rice is always going to have some really talented arms, but looking forward to seeing a guy like Dalton Wood pitch a lot this year. He's another guy who last year I grew pretty close to and got to watch him kind of do his thing. And he's, you know, uber talented. Same thing with Blake Brogdon. And then there's guys that were freshmen last year that didn't necessarily get to pitch, you know, too much. We had a lot of upperclassmen on the staff last year. But guys like Brandon Deskins, who has really good stuff from the left side. So for him, it's just a matter of getting experience. And guys like Caleb Burgess, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing him get healthy and, you know, looking forward to really seeing a lot of those guys kind of put it together. Because believe me, I mean, I know from experience that it's not easy when you get there. I mean, you know, I got there as a freshman and I thought I was almost fortunate in the fact that we really didn't have a lot of left-handed pitchers. So I really got thrown in the fire as a freshman and kind of had to learn as I went along. So, you know, for me, it's really a cool thing to watch some guys either, you know, get some bumps in the road or you know, really start to grow into their bodies and, you know, learn to pitch at the collegiate level and kind of get better and better. I think that's a really cool thing to see.
Yeah, and then I guess one kind of closing thought and question I had, you were part of something that Rice hasn't seen in a very long time, a coaching transition with Coach Graham, his tenure coming to an end and Matt Braga getting hired. What was Matt's, I guess, onboarding like for you, and kind of what about Matt do you like and gives you confidence for where this program can go under his leadership?
I loved playing for Coach Graham and Coach Braga, two, you know, really great coaches, different personalities, but really fun guys to play for. You know, it's interesting. I spent the summer that Coach Braga was hired, so that would be summer 2018. I spent on campus with my roommate, Zach Esquivel, one of my roommates, and we were kind of just working out all summer. So when Coach Braga came, you know, we... kind of his learning experience when he got to campus, you know, I was involved in. I mean, I remember, you know, showing him kind of where things were at the field in his first
tour guide, Evan.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, not quite, but, you know, as close as I can be. I mean, I remember being in the weight room. I think one of the first days he was on campus and he walked in and introduced himself and, you know, I was able to kind of tell him, you know, what I could about the program. And, you know, it was kind of fun to see him get acclimated into the job. And, you know, I love the coaches that he brought on. I'm still keep in touch with Coach Barton. I got off the phone with him a couple days ago. We keep in touch pretty often, actually. So, you know, I love the new coaches. I'm really looking forward to kind of letting them do the thing and you know, them getting their guys in there and improving the guys that we have. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what the team looks like.
Yeah, well, I can echo you there and say that we are hopeful, like what we've seen so far from the guys in 2020, and hoping for a successful coaching career for Matt Braga. That means good things for the Rice Owls and everybody on the team. But we wanted to, again, I want to say thanks for coming on and chat with us. Hopefully we won't wait another year before we touch base again. But we wish you the very best, and go Owls, I guess.
Yeah, go Owls. Thanks, Matt. I appreciate it. And thanks again for all the coverage that you do. I think it's a really cool thing, and I'm looking forward to following the team this year. I know they're off to California today for that series at Irvine, I believe, and hopefully you'll be able to tune in. I really wish I could have gone opening weekend. That would have been, you know, fun to kind of see a bunch of the guys. But yeah, looking forward to seeing the team this year. And thanks again for having me on.
Absolutely. You got it. Thanks, man.
Absolutely. Take care.
Welcome into another edition of the Roosh Podcast. We have a special guest today, Clifton Douglas, joining us from the Conference USA office here to talk some Conference USA basketball. We got a lot of things to cover as we're getting into March. It's a busy time of the year. So, but first and foremost, thank you, Clifton, for jumping on the show and joining us.
Well, thank you, Matt. I appreciate you guys having me. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. I guess we can just start off with kind of some big picture things. I think what's most curious and pressing at the moment is really pod play and how that's kind of played out in the men's game. I know that it's, I guess I can let you set the table, but it's had some hopes of what it could be. Do you think it's lived up to those, and, you know, kind of some pros and cons of what you've seen through, I guess, a season and a half of that?
Yeah, well, I think bonus play was started just to create something new and kind of shake things up around and create some buzz around conference play late in the season. So I definitely think it's done that. I think it had a few other goals that we're continuing to see. Just some excitement around the game. A lot of great matchups late in the season created some tough matchups for our top teams as we play up to March. So I think it's definitely done that. And as far as the rest of it goes, you know, we'll have to wait and see at the end of the season how our teams pan out and what we do in the postseason to see if it's really checked all of the boxes. But so far, I think it's definitely generated a lot of excitement. Definitely been hearing getting a lot of questions about it. And I think that it's got CUSA fans engaged late in the season. So that's definitely a bonus.
Yeah, I think the engagement is certainly there, and it's a double-edged sword, right? Because you have North Texas, of course, is having a heck of a season, the top of the conference standings right now. But with this bonus play format, they're up against Western Kentucky and Louisiana Tech, two teams also, you know, vying for what they hope could be an at-large bid to the NCAA tournament. So on one hand, if North Texas or Louisiana Tech or somebody wins out, that's great. They kind of punch their ticket, but I guess it's the downside. If everybody beats up on everybody, is there a chance that we could see Conference USA, at least on the men's side, go without an at-large bid for another season?
Well, I think you never know. That's definitely one thing that is very important to us, is to generate that buzz and give them the opportunities just to build their resumes late in the season, because unfortunately that hasn't been the case in previous years. I think once you get later into the season, in our old format, we had a lot of opportunities for those top-ranked teams in the top end of the league that were having to face the bottom of the league, which was actually a lot lower than it has been in the last couple of years. So I think we wanted to do our best to eliminate any opportunities late in the season for our top teams to hurt themselves playing against the bottom of the league, but then also generate opportunities for them to get games in those first two quadrants late in the season in conference play. So I think right now, currently with two teams in the top 100 being our highest net ranking, we haven't had that outlier like Middle Tennessee had been in previous years, and even Western Kentucky as well. So it's kind of hard to say. I'm still trying to review a lot of the analytics. So we'll have to wait to the end of the season to really get a firm grasp on all of the pros and cons.
And I think it's interesting because this is a Rice podcast. And when Rice upset North Texas earlier this year, that was, I think Rice was on a 6 or 7 game losing streak at the time. I think that was completely out of the blue for everybody. And that's something that I guess you do kind of avoid, but I think I agree with you. It speaks to the parity of the league that I mean, it's probably the biggest cliche in sports. Like, you know, the next game, this is a tough opponent. Like every coach will say that no matter what league you're in. But I feel like in the men's and the women's side, we've kind of seen, you know, proof of that this season that, you know, the top end might not be, you know, top end NCAA tournament quality just yet. But the bottom is better than it's been in recent years.
No, definitely. Conference USA has grown a lot just over the past 2 years. We have, I think a couple of years ago, we had five brand new coaches come in, and they've really shaken up the league. Like you mentioned, North Texas Grant's doing a great job up there. But then we've also seen a resurgence of Charlotte basketball, and then also both of our Florida schools in Florida International and Florida Atlantic, just to name a few, who are doing a great job in the league and really starting to shake things up. So, like I said, the bottom of the league has definitely grown a lot. We've gone from having a couple of teams out of 300 plus to a lot of our teams being in that 100 range. So I definitely think there's a lot of parity in the league. And I, to be honest with you, I see the league headed in the right direction. So I'm pretty excited about that.
And that's been all in on the men's side. On the women's side, I think the parity, it's interesting. It's kind of tiered itself off a little bit. And from the Rice perspective, kind of bittersweet, the 30-game conference winning streak coming to an end a couple weeks ago against Old Dominion. But you have that same kind of breakdown at the top. We have Old Dominion and Western, I think, right now. Bracketologists have them in the field with Rice, you know, pushing and very much still in contention to win the tournament. Is that kind of like the profile raising as a whole, something that y'all have been satisfied with on the women's side as well?
Oh, definitely. I think on the women's side, we're really excited about what we're seeing, especially with Old Dominion and West Kentucky, both in the top 35 RPI teams, having five total top 100 teams on the women's side, with Rice, Charlotte, and Middle Tennessee closing that out. I think we're really excited about the potential. I think that if we can, you know, create a little more buzz and get some at-large bids on the women's side, that's definitely something that we're excited about in the conference office as well.
And then on that big run from the Rice women, how important was that, from what y'all can see, for the perception of Conference USA as a whole, to have a team like that was, you know, literally a shot away from upsetting Marquette in the NCAA tournament and played a ranked Texas A&M team close this year? They've had high points, but to continue turning out and winning after winning after winning, is it a good thing for the league when Rice is rolling everybody? Or is there almost like a Alabama football effect of like, eventually could somebody beat them, please? Or, well, from your perspective, what do you think is better for the league?
Well, I think like you said, it's good to have a little parity. Anytime in conference play, anybody can get upset at any moment. I definitely like to see our teams have success in the non-conference, but then also in conference as well. But there are just some games that you need teams to be able to win, especially if you're a top RPI team. We need you to go out and continue to play well in conference so that you don't hurt your chances at an at-large bid when it comes down to the NCAA tournament. But definitely love to see the success that they've had. But then also you start to see the Old Dominions and the Western Kentuckys for the powerhouses that they are as well. So it's good to have a balance. But at the same time, definitely love to see any success that our programs can have.
Which kind of sets us up for in Frisco, I guess not that far away now. It's on both sides. We're going to see a couple tournaments that I don't know if there's a clear front runner. I mean, going into the semifinals, you're going to have several teams on both sides of the bracket where I'm not really sure if there's anybody we think ought to or is the favorite to win.
All right. Well, I think it's definitely going to be a good tournament. I think there are several teams that could possibly show up in March and turn some heads. But at the same time, I think that if our teams show up and they're at their best, it's going to be very exciting to see. So I'm looking forward to the product they put on the floor. We've enjoyed watching them all season, and this is a favorite time of year. So everybody knows March Madness is what everybody's playing for year-round, even if it's the conference tournament. But I think teams in March, especially that first week in March during our conference tournament, teams are going to really be paying attention to the successes, but then also who's playing well of late. So it's still time to turn around for those teams that haven't been in the top of our league thus far. But come March, it's anybody's game.
You have a dark horse or two that you're particularly interested going down the stretch?
There are a couple that I got my eye on, but I won't share them. I'll keep those internal and remain neutral.
Yeah, absolutely. But on the tournament note, I wanted to talk a little bit about Frisco. A couple years now that y'all have had the tournament in Frisco. I know media days there and offices. Is there a particular draw that have made this seem like the best fit for the conference? I know that the curtain draws its good and bad comments. It's a bit of a unique setup. What have you seen from the reception from fans and why y'all think it's the right fit?
Well, we've gotten huge buy-in just from the city of Frisco and surrounding communities. We go out and they're really engaged. Also, the relationship that we have with the Cowboys now has been great. They're a great host. They really work well with us, and they're excited about our event as well. I don't think that if they didn't love the partnership that we had with them, we'd be there for the next 2 years. So I think that also having that option in 2022 to come back is really an opportunity for us to continue to grow. To continue to grow the championship, but then also continue to build our footprint in the Frisco area. So I think that we have a huge financial impact, economic impact in the area. I think the city of Frisco loves our tournament being there. They really embrace us and our fans from all across the country. So I think that we want to just continue to build a great event for fans to travel into Dallas, but then also a great environment for the city of Frisco and the surrounding community to come out and enjoy some family-friendly fun.
And sitting as a relatively short, a four-hour drive up 45 from Houston, I certainly don't mind if y'all want to host all of your events in Frisco. But I know when we were talking about the top teams in the league on both sides, you got your Western Kentuckys and your Charlottes, your Middle Tennessees, Old Dominion, a lot of folks that I know maybe not aren't as thrilled that they got to make the flight to Houston. It's a pretty spread out conference. There's not really a geographic middle, but has there been any thoughts in maybe potentially having something that's more centralized or are moving, or is Frisco something that y'all see as kind of the path going forward, barring any major changes?
Well, I think, like I said, I mean, we enjoy our relationship with the Cowboys and the city of Frisco, but we do understand that we are a very spread out league, and you know, a lot of schools do have to travel out to Texas, and that can be very taxing financially, but then also on the student athletes as well. So we're definitely open to opportunities wherever they might be. So anytime we get a lead on a potential host, we definitely will be willing to look at that as well, just for whatever's best for the league.
And then I guess following up on the best for the league, another thing that's been kind of, I guess, a work in progress that we've seen over this year and last year has been how the league has structured their television contracts. I know that a lot of the women's games and the men's games are getting put onto ESPN Plus, and then there's also the Conference USA TV piece, and then there's a couple other. I feel like there's always a random network here and there that has a game. I know that there's been thought put into how you and the team get this league out to the masses for visibility. What is kind of the internal conversation and dialogue been with getting the league, basketball, football, everything on TV, and whether or not there's a best way to do it?
Well, I think oversaturation is always a great thing when it comes to getting coverage for your member institutions. So any opportunity we have our schools be seen, we definitely want to take advantage of that. That's why you kind of see a different type of agreement as far as our media coverage that we have here at Conference USA. Like you said, we have our package deals with CBS. We also have some agreements with ESPN as well. But then also several of them just with streaming the games on Facebook. And then also just having our CUSA TV platform as well. Any opportunity just to be new and innovative, but then also reach out to the modern day consumer that is watching a lot of sports on their mobile devices these days. We found that as an opportunity just to reach a different consumer level that we had not reached in the past. So we felt that was a great opportunity to partner with Facebook and working through Stadium as well. Just for us to be able to reach more consumers on the go. And I think that we've got some positive feedback from that, and it's something that we'll continue to build on.
And I believe a couple of those contracts are due to expire in a couple years concurrently. Is that right?
Yes. So we are definitely looking for, you know, always on the look for what's next and what's going to be best for our league and how we can better cover our member institutions. So definitely looking forward to the next chapter on media coverage for Conference USA.
Well, I can say from my perspective, it's always refreshing when I can go up and pull up my computer or my TV and be able to find the game I want to on TV. It feels like not too long ago that not just this league, but a lot of leagues that you couldn't find a Tuesday week baseball game on TV, and now you can. So at the very, very least, that's a positive. And I know that for those who don't get to be there in Frisco, getting to watch all of the tournament games on TV will be a big plus.
Definitely. And we'll definitely have all of them available. So if you can't make the trip out to Frisco, definitely encourage you guys to check us out online.
All right. And then I guess one last kind of closing thought. We've skipped around, talked a couple different things, but particularly on the basketball front, we've talked pod play and we've talked the schedule in Frisco. Are there any one or two kind of big picture things that the conference office would like to achieve in men's and women's basketball over the next couple of years? What are your kind of goals and your driving force that are helping you make these decisions on scheduling and networks and on all sorts of things?
Well, I mean, ultimately, our end game is just continued success for our member institutions and just to continue to grow grow our brand in men's basketball and women's basketball. And then also just to continue to grow our event in Frisco. So definitely are always looking for new sponsor opportunities, but then also looking for different ways to enhance the experience of the fans and also the student athletes here when they come out in Frisco for the championship. That's why we host multiple events, do grassroots marketing in Frisco and the surrounding areas. We are having other ancillary events that we have created this year as well. One in particular is our Shooting for the Stars event, which is a young girls only event. I think it's ages 10 to 18 that we're encouraging girls to come out. It's going to be Monday, March 9th at 7 p.m. held at the Lincoln Experience right down the street from the Star. So we're going to have our Commissioner McLeod and a few other panelists, and it's going to be moderated by Laura Harris of NBC5 Today. So it's going to be a new event that we're doing, just trying to reach out to our young girls so they can come out and hear from some powerful women in the industry, in the sports industry, and definitely have some role models to look up to there. Also this year, we're having to be a second year of our youth clinic, which is being held Tuesday, March 10th from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. So as young student athletes from grades 4 to 6, boys and girls will come out and be able to get some skills training with some of our student athletes from each of our member institutions. So just something else that we're doing for the city of Frisco, really trying to grow our footprint there. And then also definitely the Fan Fest, which is going on for the duration of the tournament, March 11th through the 14th, starting at 11 and going to 7. Wednesday through Friday, and then on Saturday from noon to 7. So you'll have everything from family-friendly entertainment there, basketball skills and activities. We'll have sponsor tents, live radio broadcasts, and then also pep rallies for the bands and the cheerleaders from each competing institution will come out prior to their games and have like a pep rally out there for the fans as well. So a lot going on just to really grow the event. And just continue to grow the CUSA brand in the Frisco area.
Well, it sounds like y'all have been busy. Make sure you sleep at some point. And wanted to say thank you again, Clifton Douglas from the Conference USA office, joining us to talk some basketball. Wish y'all a good rest of the season and a productive March. And I hope to run into you sometime soon in Frisco.
I appreciate it. I'll see you there, Matt.
This show was edited and produced by Carter Spires. It features music from Joseph McDade.